Welcome to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is out today. And one of the largest environmental protests in history is happening right now. Millions of students and adults around the world are taking time off from school and work today to take part in a global climate strike. Now, the action comes ahead of a planned UN Climate Action Summit taking place next week in New York. There are more than 5,000 climate strike events happening in 156 countries over the next week. Here in Florida, more than two dozen events are planned throughout the state, including in Tampa, Melbourne, West Palm Beach, Orlando, Jacksonville, St. Pete, Sarasota, Key Largo, and more. The climate strikes have all been inspired by 16-year-old Swedish activist Greta Thunberg. She spoke to CBS News last week about her call to get world leaders to panic about the need for meaningful climate action to reduce carbon emissions.
Of course, by panic, I don't mean literally panic, but that we, and that especially they, step out of their comfort zone, because the planet is outside its comfort zone and we also need to be outside our comfort zone to prevent the worst consequences from happening.
In Jacksonville, 16-year-old high school sophomore Katie Carlson is one of just thousands of young people around the state who got inspired by Thunberg's Fridays for Future school strikes, pressing adults to take action on climate change. She's leading a climate strike in downtown Jacksonville that kicked off at 10 a.m. this morning.
And the strike really inspired me to take action here in Jacksonville because I hadn't seen much movement. I really wanted to take that opportunity.
Now, a little later in the hour, we'll go live to a climate strike taking place here over the noon hour in St. Petersburg, Florida. And we want to hear from you as we talk about the global climate strike this hour. Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup. Wherever you are in the state, the number is 305-995-1800. Tweet the show at Florida Roundup. Now, as we mentioned, the youth climate strike is happening as we speak. Carolyn Lewis is founder and senior advisor of the Clio Institute. That's a climate education nonprofit. Her organization helped plan the strike happening now in Miami Beach. She joins us along with high school students Andrew Weaver and John Paul Mejia. They took part in the strike, and they're all with us from WLRN in Miami. Welcome to the Florida Roundup, everybody. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Carolyn, let's start with you. Tell us about the strategic importance of today's worldwide strikes. We're seeing millions of people turn out today.
So this is the warmest I have ever felt about my heart being able to survive climate change. Miami students have stood up and said, we are part of the global movement to demand a livable future. And what was significant about today's march? It wasn't just about asking Miami to act locally. It's about asking every adult to act globally. And so that the combined effort of all of these students finding and sharing their voices wakes up mankind globally, so we can start drawing down greenhouse gases and the carbon emissions, and we can start looking forward to a livable world for these young people. And I do want to correct one thing that you said in the introduction. I did not plan this march. I guided the students who were planning it. They planned every single detail, from permits to PR. We were just there to be a resource for them as needed, and it has been a labor of love.
Andrew and John, all kudos to you. From Greta Thunberg in Sweden on down, this movement has been led by young people. Andrew, let's start with you. What motivated you to participate in the climate strike?
Well, what really motivated me is that the community I live in, Miami, is a frontline community on this climate crisis. And we're going to be hit the hardest by rising sea levels, saltwater intrusion in our freshwater tables. And I saw this as an opportunity to really have a say in my future. And that's why it was so important to get involved in this. And that's why I was involved in this. And more than just Miami and Florida, I have family out in California who live in Sonoma who have been threatened by these wildfires out there that have destroyed vast amounts of land and homes and natural habitat areas. So this was not only just like a community issue for me. It was really like a personal issue, and I saw this as like a personal fight I had to do.
John, that's absolutely right. Florida is threatened by climate change, but so is every state. So is the entire world. This is a global youth movement you guys are part of.
Absolutely. This has really inspired in all of us a sense of global connection. As we're getting into this age of our late teenage years, we are really inspired from a global and civic perspective to stand up and act as in regards to our future, because for too long it has been in the hands of few and it's out of control at this moment.
Caroline, you're a former teacher and principal. We're hearing at this hour that a student in Broward County actually got suspended for handing out flyers promoting today's climate strikes. What's your response to parents and schools who maybe don't support these students and don't think they should be walking out of school?
Well, I'm really ambivalent because I understand the need to protect students and to make sure that we don't put them in potential harm's way. However, let's be real. They go to school every day and they don't know whether somebody's going to show up with a gun or they're going to get hit crossing the road. My frustration with what happened in Broward County and at some schools in Miami-Dade County where the school buses for the field trip were canceled and some principals refused to give it an excused absence. My response is this. With parental approval, let the kids strike. We have spent so much time as teachers, principals, adults, complaining that not enough of our teens have a global civic engagement feel to their lives. They're apathetic and disengaged. And here we have a group of young people who understand the science, who get the urgency, who now have fires in their belly, and we want to squelch them? That just does not sit right with me. We are really in the years of living dangerously right now. We have no time to waste. We need to mobilize ourselves and support these kids who are mobilizing. So I would appeal greatly to parents and principals to get together and talk about how to continue supporting this youth movement. Today is just the beginning. It's going to continue. It's going to get louder. It's going to get stronger. And I would rather have these adults at our side, not fighting against these student voices.
Thank you so much for that, Carolyn Lewis of the Clio Institute, and students and activists Andrew Weaver and John Paul Mejia, all in Miami today. All right, two Florida congressmen are heading up an effort in Washington to deal with climate change. Representative Ted Deutsch, a Democrat, and Representative Francis Rooney, a Republican, lead the Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus on Capitol Hill. We're pleased to welcome both congressmen to the Florida Roundup right now. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us. You know, you've introduced bipartisan legislation, along with some other sponsors in the Congress, to put a price on carbon and return 100% of the net revenue as a rebate to American families. You say this will reduce U.S. carbon pollution by up to 45% by the year 2030 and over 90% by the year 2050, getting as close to that net zero activists are calling for. Congressman Deutsch, let's start with you. How would this proposal, it's called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, how would it work?
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on, especially on this day when there's climate action led by young people all over the country and all over the globe. It's a powerful, powerful moment. And we need to recognize that the voices that are out in the streets today aren't just making a one-time statement, that they understand that it's their future that's at stake, that the planet is being left to them in a worse condition, and they're not standing for it. So I'm thrilled to be with you today. The way that that our bill works is very simply to put a price on carbon, to tax carbon at its source, and then to make sure that all of the dollars that are collected, everything that comes in from those payments, is rebated directly to the American people. And as you said, if we do this, we'll get as close to net zero as we can with this bill. But that's not enough. We ultimately have to get to net zero. That's what we're trying to accomplish. And this is the first bipartisan serious effort in climate change in decades.
It certainly is. Congressman Rooney, you also helped win bipartisan support here in Florida to ban offshore drilling in the state. And you got a lot of attention recently. You published a widely read op-ed. The title was, "I'm a Conservative Republican. Climate change is real." So here's my question to you. How do you get Republicans in the Congress, along with more than a few Democrats, to support the notion of a carbon tax to bring down carbon emissions that are driving climate change?
Well, first, I want to say what an honor and pleasure it is to partner with Ted on this important bill. And the argument that I'm using with our team, the Republicans, is that the coal is 6 to 7 times more carbon-centric than natural gas. And it's a lot more than that when you sequester and capture carbon from natural gas and capture methane. And when you look at that, you say, why not use the carbon tax to both raise some money that we can use for environmental needs and other needs, and to or give back to the American people like our bill, and take coal out of the market and improve our energy mix.
Congressman Deutsch, you know, progressives in the U.S. House of Representatives, where you serve, along with all of these climate strikers we're seeing all over the world today, including here in Florida, are calling, for the most part, they're calling for a Green New Deal, and that has yet to gain any traction in the House. Critics say it's unrealistic, it could hurt business in setting these aggressive targets to reduce emissions. And the Green New Deal, by the way, doesn't include a carbon pricing structure. So how to find common ground between those youthful activists pushing for a Green New Deal, people that are wanting to take action in Congress like yourselves, and those in Congress who don't feel the urgency that the protesters and your cohort in the Congress feels on this issue?
Well, thanks. Look, that last group that you referenced, the people who don't feel urgency, they're not my focus right now. They're going to feel it because these young people are going to make them feel it. It's very simple. The climate is changing. The planet is warming. Humans are the culprits. We need to take action. It's true the Green New Deal doesn't have a carbon tax in it, but I've had lots of conversations with some of the people who are the strongest advocates, and we're all on the same page about the ambitious goals, getting to net zero, and changing behavior of polluters. This carbon fee is a significant step that we can take to help accomplish that big piece of what's necessary in order for us to get to net zero. It's all consistent with the big picture, which is we've got to take action. This has to be a priority. This is an urgent moment for the planet, and we all have to work together to address it. It's one last thing, if I may. Greta Thunberg was in our committee this week. She testified in front of members of the House, and there's nothing more powerful than hearing Greta and hearing the kids who have sued the federal government because their constitutional rights are being violated by this reliance on fossil fuels, having them come to Washington to share with us how they view the urgency of this matter. We're all in this together, and this is one piece of it. But I'm fully supportive of what the young folks are doing all around the world today to elevate this issue so that everyone understands it.
Congressman Rooney, do you think the testimony of Greta Thunberg and the other youth activists are moving some of your colleagues on the Hill or not?
Well, it can't hurt. You know, you never know what is going to be the commentary or op-ed or protest that's going to get things moved down the field. But I know that in our area, Ted's and mine, when the citizens had uproar about the sugar industry putting polluted water into Lake Okeechobee, they got it stopped. And so every time someone like this lady comes and speaks articulately and talks about science-based solutions to climate change, I think that that's got to help us advance the ball.
And we're talking right now with Congressman Francis Rooney, Republican of the Naples area, Congressman Ted Deutsch, Republican from South Florida, who head up the bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus in D.C. It's the first meaningful bipartisan action on climate in the Congress, as Representative Deutsch said, in decades. This is all happening as young people and adults in the millions hit the streets today the world over as part of the global climate strike. There are about 24 events in Florida alone happening right now. In a few minutes, we'll go live to an event happening in St. Pete. But first, let's get some of your calls on the air here on the Florida Roundup. What's your reaction to the global climate strike? And what are your thoughts about how we get to a place where emissions are reduced enough to stave off the worst impacts scientists say are coming down the road due to climate change? 305-995-1800. Aaron is calling in. He was just at the climate strike in Miami Beach, we're told. Hey, Aaron, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just at the climate strike outside of the Miami Beach City Hall, led by John Paul Mejia, who I heard you had on, who pointed out, and I think he said it exactly right, that right now we have adults who are acting like children and children who are acting like adults when it comes to this issue. And it's just so great to see on this issue and so many others that it really is the young people, as has been the case pretty consistently throughout American history, that's making real things happen.
The young people are leading this, Congressman Deutsch. They've really been vocal. We're monitoring some of the action on social media, not just here in the U.S., but the strikes are happening worldwide. Let me ask you both quickly as a follow-up. As big business says they're getting serious about addressing climate change, Amazon, for example, yesterday said they're going to get to 100% renewable energy by 2030. They want to be carbon neutral by 2040. While that's happening, at the same time, the Trump administration is eliminating the direct federal regulation of methane, a potent greenhouse gas. So how do we build a consensus on climate change when the White House is moving in one direction and you guys on Capitol Hill, business leaders and the street movement is going in another direction? Congressman Deutsch.
Well, there is a growing consensus, and unfortunately, the administration is not a part of that consensus. The idea that we would abandon regulation of methane, that we would walk away from the Paris Climate Accords, that we would that we would withdraw from our leadership role on climate, is unfortunate. But the good news is, even as the administration does that, local governments, business leaders, others, especially young people, have stepped up to assert that leadership. And look, it's great to be doing this with my friend Congressman Rooney, and we're fortunate to have Congresswoman Castor, who's chairing an important committee in Congress that's focused on climate change. That's great, but the caller was right. It is young people who are leading this movement. It's young people who have forced the issue of gun safety onto the agenda. And they've been successful. It is young people who understand the threats that climate change poses. They are stepping up and in a global way are going to force the governments to follow their lead. I'm proud of them and so thrilled that we have the opportunity to see this great work that they're doing.
Congressman Rooney, about a minute till the break, your thoughts.
Yeah, if I might add a comment to that. And energy given by the people.
And we're you know what, Congressman, we're having a little trouble hearing you. You know what, let's pause for a moment and get a better connection for Congressman Rooney, and we will be back in a moment with more of your calls and tweets. If you're just tuning in here on the Florida Roundup this Friday, we're covering the global climate strike taking place all over the world today, from Florida to parts across the globe. 24 or so events planned in the Sunshine State as millions hit the streets around the world pressing for meaningful action on climate. We'll go live to a climate strike in St. Pete in a few minutes and also continue our conversation with Representatives Deutsch and Rooney, Republican and Democrat of Florida, pushing for action on climate change in Washington. What are your questions? Get on the line, 305-995-1800, here on the Florida Roundup. This is Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville, and we're continuing our conversation about today's global climate strike right now with Representative Ted Deutsch, Democrat representing Florida's 22nd Congressional District. And in a moment, we'll reconnect with Republican Congressman Francis Rooney from Florida's 19th District. Both lead the Climate Solutions Caucus on Capitol Hill. They are pushing for a carbon fee, a carbon tax. What are your thoughts about how that could work to mitigate the impacts of climate change? Give us a call. It's 305 305- 800-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup. Ashley is on the line in Orlando. Hey, Ashley, happy Friday to you. Go ahead. All right, Ashley, if you're not there, give us a call back. And as we try to get Congressman Rooney back, Congressman Deutsch, I'm going to read a couple of tweets to you that are coming into the Florida Roundup about the global climate strike. Here's one. This is like Pavarotti singing at a local gym. It's beautiful, but in the wrong place. If you want real impact and improvement, send the kids to protest in China and India, the biggest polluters that really need to change their ways. What's your response, Congressman, to those who say, why should the U.S. take aggressive action on climate when some of the world's worst polluters are other countries, along with the United States?
Well, yeah, sure, that's true. But the United States is the only country that withdrew from the Paris Accords, under which everyone committed to dramatically reduce their carbon emissions. I'm on Twitter. I'm just sitting here, and it's just unbelievably moving to go through this and see these crowds, not just in outside my door here in Washington and in London and in New York, but in Romania and in South Africa and in countries all over the world. A million people in Berlin marching right now. People should march everywhere. Yes, countries around the world need to do more. But this massive turnout of young people all across the globe is a real movement that has to be responded to. And those members of Congress that I serve with, members of the House and Senate, who think that the solution to climate change is to just learn how to raise our roads and adapt, and they're not listening to the young people, and they need to.
Congressman Rooney, what about that? Those that sound the buzzwords about adaptation and mitigation, and in Florida, we hear a lot about that. They've been criticized by activists who say, no, we need to be getting to net zero emissions, which is what you're trying to bring about. What about that?
Yeah, I think we need a kind of an all of the above strategy. This is such a dire situation that's gone on so long. You know, there's going to have to be some adaptation and mitigation to deal with sea level rise while we try to stem the tide and meet or beat the Paris goals and ultimately have a hard stop on carbon at some day. But the other day, you don't want to detract, use mitigation and adaptation as an excuse, as you just correctly said, for focusing on decarbonization, going to alternate fuels, stopping putting so much CO2 in the atmosphere. I was going to say before we got cut off, if I might, in addition to the energy generated by these young people all around the world, you made the comment about corporations. And corporate America is moving on to solve real problems, not ideological roadblocks. You got 145 companies, public, private, large and small, writing, demanding gun violence reform. You've got the Alliance for Market Solutions, which is helped me develop one of the other carbon tax bills. It doesn't do the same thing about giving the money to people like Ted's and mine does. It talks about using the money to offset payroll taxes and insurance to make it cheaper to hire employees. But regardless of what you do with the money, you need a $50+ carbon tax to modify the behavior of the energy industry.
Oh, you know what? Let's talk about that, because recently a spokesperson for Duke Energy talked about the fuel portfolio that they're looking at and how they're going to have to figure out the right mix of renewables. Let's listen to Duke Energy from here in Florida on this.
We will need a diverse set of resources, including nuclear, natural gas, renewables, battery storage, energy efficiency, and the electrification of transportation. We will also need coal for some time, even as we increasingly rely on other fuel sources.
Okay, Congressman Deutsch and also then Congressman Rooney, what about that? What the energy industry is saying about how they plan to transition?
Look, we need to transition off of carbon-based fuels. That's the transition that needs to happen, and everyone, including corporate America, needs to figure out how to do it.
And because they're saying, you hear Duke saying, "Look, we're going to keep using coal. We're not.
Yeah,
you're
no,
not going
I,
off
I,
coal."
Right. Well, that's not going to get us to net zero. And
right.
There's a problem that we have, and there's a problem in D.C. that even as we're working hard on putting a price on carbon, at the same time we're having those conversations, Congress continues to make these huge appropriations, spend all of this money in subsidies for the fossil fuel industry. That needs to stop. There needs to be a realization that if we take action on climate, we're helping make the planet healthier. We're securing a better future for our kids, both in terms of the air they breathe, the water they drink, and the economic opportunities that will be available to them. And we're helping to address what will be a major national security crisis if we don't tackle climate change. So, no, I don't accept this idea that the goal should be to try to reduce and we'll skirt around the edges. What all of these young people marching around the world are saying is we need drastic change in order for us to change the direction of our the world that we live in. And it's fair because this is the world that we're giving to them to live in.
Let's go to Roy in Hollywood. Go ahead, Roy. You're on the air. Hey, Roy, go ahead.
I've had this idea for some time that, you know, driving on our highways and roads is a privilege, not a right. I think we should, you know, in the United States, limit driving of personal vehicles one day a week.
One day a week?
Yes.
How do we do that?
Well, I mean, first responders, emergency vehicles, and that could, you know, you plan around your schedule. You know, it's a sacrifice, but, you know, what's the alternative?
Well, how do you, I think the next question to that is, how do you build a public transportation system that supplants the automobile? You know, how do you even begin to do that?
Well, much of that is already in place.
In some parts of the country, sure. But you know what? I'm glad you brought that up because I want to ask Congressman Rooney about this piece of it. Certainly, major industry is the biggest driver of emissions. But everything that we do as personal consumers is also a piece of the puzzle, including the cars we drive. Here's a tweet from William. He says, I believe Florida should offer tax incentives for the purchase of electric or hybrid vehicles. Other states have started to do that. Okay, Congressman Rooney, what about that? And also, do you agree with your counterpart, Congressman Deutsch, about putting more pressure on the major utilities to wean themselves off fossil fuels?
Well, I may be a little more of an incrementalist only than Ted, but I don't disagree with anything he said at all. The only thing I would say is we can get rid of the worst polluting fuel now, coal, with a carbon tax. Then we can work to deploy capture and sequestration technologies on natural gas as we move towards more and more renewables. The time may come at some point when the amount of natural gas used is much lower and you start to move towards none. But that's going to take a long time. This country uses a lot of fuel. You take coal out of the equation, you've got a lot that you need to replace with natural gas in the near term. You know, Florida is a great poster child for both use of renewables, especially solar, as well as for getting rid of coal. I believe Florida Power and Light is 100% coal-free now, and there are very few coal-fired plants left in Florida.
That's right. And, you know, I'm curious to ask you about that, Congressman Deutsch. You know, the utility piece of it is very important. But what about the choices we make as consumers and the incentives that are put in place for people to, as the person on Twitter said, transition to a hybrid vehicle? I mean, there are so many things like that that I think the average consumer would do if they could afford to do it.
Sure. I think we ought to be looking at everything that we can do to incentivize behavior. And by the way, that's not just true for the kinds of cars that we buy. We saw the success in encouraging people to buy electric cars through the policies that were enacted. But it also applies to policies that encourage people to go to solar power, to give people the ability to sell solar power back to the grid. I mean, everything that we can do to incentivize behavior like that. I think we ought to do. But if I can just address one other thing, though, I mean, we're having this conversation on the same day that that California and two dozen states, including California, had to sue the administration because the administration reversed their authority, California's own authority, to have higher fuel efficiency standards. Mm-hmm. But that there has to be a realization that the administration is doing everything it can to go backwards on climate. And what people like Congressman Rooney and I and Congresswoman Castor and especially the millions of young people marching around the world are saying is that that's just not acceptable, not after all of the steps that have been taken in recent years to start to address climate and not when the urgency is as great as it is today.
Let's go to JD in Tampa. Hi, JD. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Thank you. I am a car-carrying Republican, Tesla-driving, climate change-believing individual.
Uh-huh.
So that makes me an anomaly, huh. I think. Because
well, there's two of us, buddy. Thank you. I'm glad
to hear. That's good to hear because, you know, we've got a problem. We need to address it. However, having said all that, I do not believe that taxing corporations or polluters is going to solve any problem. It's just going to allow them to pay money, and the air is still going to be polluted. And they'll pass on that extra cost to the consumer. And so it's really, the carbon tax, to me, is a dumb idea. If we want to get really bold, and Obama was going in the right direction with this, he wanted to, you know, mandate that car companies had to adhere to emission standard, and that was great. And, you know, I think Trump's great on a lot of levels, but the environmental.
Yeah, I hear you, JD. I hear you. And we're coming up to a break. So, Congressman Rooney, before we thank both of you gentlemen, what about those who just, they don't buy into the idea of a carbon tax, like that caller?
Well, if I might right quick, I think we're talking about two different things here. The carbon tax will drive a market shift, which will move towards cleaner fuels, whereas the standards for automobile emissions are a totally separate kettle of fish that also need to be done to make sure that we move towards cleaner automobiles and ultimately electric cars.
Well, listen, gentlemen, we really appreciate your bipartisan efforts on this, your service to Florida, and appearing on the Florida Roundup. Congressman Ted Deutsch and Congressman Francis Rooney both with us. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Now, as we've been discussing for the full hour here today, more than two dozen climate strikes are taking place across Florida today and tonight. They're part of the global movement calling for rapid decarbonization of this planet to avoid the worst impacts associated with climate change. Reporter Jessica Mazaros of WUSF in Tampa is at a climate strike right now. It's taking place in St. Petersburg. Jessica, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And we're seeing a robust turnout at these strikes across the state. What are you experiencing in St. Pete right now? What's happening?
So in St. Petersburg, I would say anywhere between 200 to 500 strikers. They're actually marching right now. We stopped at Williams Park. It started at the City Hall in downtown St. Pete. And now we're at Williams Park and we're going to circle back. But it's people who are from ages 3 years old to 80 I've talked to, you know, parents bringing their young children. There are also schools bringing entire classrooms here to bring in the youth into this conversation because Greta Thunberg, the Swedish 16-year-old, is really a driving force, it seems, behind this protest and the others globally.
Yeah, it really is remarkable how her intensity around this issue and her commitment has inspired young people and adults all over the world. What are they saying to you about their motivations and how much of a factor she played? And it's interesting as well to hear that teachers are bringing students to this event.
Well, not just that, but I talked to students and teachers who said that they studied Greta Thunberg's videos. She has TED Talks, you know, she spoke on Capitol Hill, testified in front of Congress. So, you know, they're definitely having her in the conversation. She's a driving force. A lot of the young people who I spoke to under 18 say, you know, that they need to take over because the adults are killing their planet. And some people who I talked to, you know, the Sierra Club of Florida are the ones who are initiating this particular, they organized this particular event. And they said basically what they want globally is for the U.S. to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. And on the state level, they're pretty encouraged with some of the things from Governor Ron DeSantis, but hoping he follows through. But they say that actually change happens on a local level. And they're particularly happy with the city of St. Petersburg. The mayor and city council have enacted forward-thinking solutions, as they call it, an integrated sustainability action plan. So it's basically how the city can be 100% fossil fuel free in 25 years. They'd like to see more of that coming from local government.
Right. Certainly in Florida, it's an even more pressing issue than maybe in some other states, given our many miles of coastline and our vulnerability to extreme heat. You'd think, I would guess, that's driving some of the rhetoric that you're seeing out there today, Jessica.
Definitely. I mean, there are people here dressed up as squirrels on fire because of the heat, just talking about how literally we're burning up over here in the state of Florida. So definitely is part of the conversation.
Well, we so appreciate you being with us here on the Florida Roundup. There is a climate strike happening right now in St. Pete, but there are about two dozen of them happening in Florida, from all the way down in Key Largo to all the way north in the Panhandle, as they join millions of activists all over the world today, taking part in a global climate strike, calling for action on reducing carbon emissions. It sounds like it's getting loud there, Jessica, so I'll let you get back to the action. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for letting me share. Thanks.
Thank you. She's reporter Jessica Mazaros of WUSF in Tampa, coming to us live from a climate strike taking place in St. Petersburg, one of two dozen or so across the Sunshine State today. And we've been talking about climate change here on the Florida Roundup and the global climate strike. And there are some related issues tied to that. And we're going to get into that in a moment after the break. In a moment, as those climate strikers take to the streets, another group of activists is calling for less bottled water to come out of Florida's endangered aquifer. That's next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is out today. Well, it's one of the state's most popular recreational attractions. Ginny Springs in Gilchrist County is known as a slice of pure Florida, with crystal clear blue waters, famous cave diving, and pristine springs. But now food giant Nestle is requesting a permit that would allow the company to pump up to 1 million gallons of water a day from Ginny Springs. This is to produce more bottled water for Nestle. Environmentalists, not surprisingly, oppose this deal. They're citing concerns about the water supply. Reporter Amy Green of WMFE in Orlando joins us with more. Amy, you know, Ginny Springs is one of the most popular attractions in Florida. It's along the Santa Fe River. This permit would allow Nestle to take 1 million gallons a day from the springs, basically for free. They'd have to pay a one-time application fee of $115. I think that's driving some of the controversy. How would this impact the water supply for that area and for the state's aquifer overall?
Well, sure. Yeah. So I think the reason we're seeing a lot of this anger with this issue is because it's really, for a lot of Floridians, a very existential one, right? I mean, water is a fundamental resource. Without it, we die. We can't survive without it. And so all of the development and economic growth that we're experiencing in Florida, we can't have any of that without water to support it. And one thing that makes water unique in Florida is that it belongs to all of us. The Florida Water Resources Act established that the water in our springs and rivers and lakes is the property of the state. And so this water that's under debate there over the issue with Nestle in North Central Florida, this is water that belongs to us. And so I think what is angering Floridians so much in that area is that this is a situation where Nestle wants to take this water and bottle it and sell it. And this is water that belongs to us. It's water that we need to survive. And so I think to a lot of Floridians, that kind of sounds like a racket, right?
Right. It's interesting. You know, we've been talking about the climate strikes and climate change for most of the hour here on the show. Producing and transporting recyclable plastic bottles that hold bottled water, that contributes to climate change. The bottles then often get thrown away, end up in the ocean or in a landfill, more pollution. And sometimes they hold nothing more than purified tap water. But at the same time, we are all addicted to bottled water in this country, Amy. And so Nestle's trying to meet consumer demand. This is going beyond the permitting fight. This is about Americans' consumer choices as well and how they're driving climate change.
That's right. Sure. You know, climate change, it's you know, I think for a lot of people, it's a global issue. It's almost kind of incomprehensible. And so I think, you know, for people who feel motivated to do something, you know, what can I do to make a change? Well, you know, start small. And beginning with this issue of bottled water is a great place to start. You know, I think another thing that's angering Floridians in this region is that this action is coming as at the same time we know our aquifer is in trouble. You know, we know that it's overtapped. We know that water districts are exploring alternative drinking water sources because that aquifer is overtapped and the springs in the region are, you know, beginning to run dry. You know, this action comes at the same time environmental groups actually have taken legal action over state cleanup plans for 15 of Florida's most important springs. So we know that the aquifer is in trouble. And, you know, kind of going back to this issue of climate change, a great place to start is bottled water. You know, just avoid buying bottled water if this is an issue you disagree with. Another environmental problem in that is plastics. Microplastics is a bad environmental problem. These plastics are so small they can just float in the air that we breathe. And so just avoiding single-use plastics, just use a reusable water bottle, and drinking tap water is one way anyone can contribute.
That's right. Often bottled water is just purified tap water, but it's amazing how alluring it is, especially if you're somewhere where it's being handed out or you're hot and you need a cold drink. It's easy to obtain, and as you pointed out, we can't get by for long without water. Okay, let me ask you, as you talk about the impact to the springs, we do have the largest concentration of freshwater springs in the world here in Florida, but they are being endangered by increasing pollution, declines in water flow, over-extraction, harmful algae blooms. Activists who oppose this Nestle move are saying that no more extraction permits should be granted. They want to reduce existing permits and even eliminate bottled water production entirely in Florida, or at least tax corporations like Nestle for the water they're now taking out basically free of charge. Those demands go before the state's water officials, the water management districts. Can environmental groups get their ear on this or not?
Well, certainly environmental groups are making their voices heard. I mentioned that the legal action that some environmental groups have taken over the state cleanup plans for some of the state's most important springs. We also seeing a grass movement afoot aimed at recognizing the legal rights of Florida's water bodies. And this is modeled after a movement in Ohio that was aimed at recognizing the legal rights of Lake Erie. And now there are groups across the state of Florida that are trying to seek the same thing, trying to seek legal rights for water bodies, including the Santa Fe River and water bodies here in Central Florida. Certainly environmental groups are speaking out. We're also hearing from Nestle, and the company says, you know, that their practices are environmentally sustainable and environmentally minded. And so, you know, certainly this will continue to be a big issue.
And you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. As we continue talking with Amy Green of WMFE in Orlando over a fight between environmentalists and Nestle, they want to extract water from Florida's pristine Ginny Springs. Here's a tweet from a listener. It's 2019. Please buy a reusable water bottle. We have not bought water bottles in our house in 4 years. Here's another tweet. There should be a 50-cent per bottle deposit on water bottles. And here's an email from Andy in Jacksonville. I've enjoyed Ginny Springs for 40 years now, and I'm opposed to anything that would impact the already suffering outflow from the source. Let us not forget that the CEO of Nestle actually stated that water is not a right. What's been the response, Amy, from Nestle to this whole flap, this whole controversy?
Yeah, like I said, Nestle says that their practices are environmentally sustainable, and they point to water management district regulations that allow them to do this. They also say that this action is that it falls within the sustainability, of course, of the river and the spring itself. They say that the amount of water that they're withdrawing from the water body, while it's obviously large, it actually represents less than 0.5% of the average flow of the Santa Fe River at the site where the U.S. Geological Service measures that response there from Nestle on the issue.
There's a petition at the website change.org opposing this notion of withdrawing more water from Ginny Springs. It's garnered over 32,000 signatures, so there's certainly some stiff opposition. Meanwhile, what's the status on Nestle getting its permit? And so what are they likely to do as we read the tea leaves there?
I can't take a guess at what the water managers will decide to do on that. The fundamental issue here that the aquifer is overtapped, that the springs are overtapped, this is an issue that we're seeing across the state.
It is, even to the point that the New York Times decided to editorialize about Ginny Springs, pointing out that the state's aquifers are shrinking at the same time that corporations want to appropriate even more of them. This goes beyond Ginny Springs, as you've been reporting, Amy. It's really a statewide aquifer issue, isn't it?
That's right. The Florida Aquifer is among the world's most productive aquifers. It spans 100,000 miles, and it's found in Florida and also parts of Georgia and South Carolina. It's a primary drinking water source for 10 million people in this region. And so again, this is a fundamental issue. This is people's drinking water. This is, you know, we need this resource to survive and to support the growth and development in our region. If we don't have the water to support that growth, then we're not able to do it. And so, again, I think that's why Floridians are very impassioned on this issue.
Yeah. Water always sparks strong emotions. And as you said, Amy, anything we can do to kind of wean ourselves or at least reduce our use of single-use plastics is a good thing. Changing habits is hard, but if you can, take that reusable water bottle with you so you're less likely to buy a plastic bottle of water. And thank you, Amy, for your excellent reporting on this. We really appreciate you being able to join us and provide some insights to listeners all over the state here on the Florida Roundup. Thanks, Amy.
You are welcome.
That is Amy Green joining us from WMFE in Orlando as we discuss the controversy over possible extraction of water from Florida's aquifer in Ginny Springs. By the way, if you've never been, go. It is truly one of the most beautiful places in Florida. And that is our show. Thanks so much for being with us here today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are producers. Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Our theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next Friday at noon.